The 9 Years Podcast is brought to you in association with Freddie Flaxman. All right, everybody, and welcome to episode 307, I think. Of the 9 Years Podcast. I am Nick Draper. Thank you very much for downloading the show this week. Stu is absent this week. We have replaced him with my brother Chris. Chris, how are you?
Nice. Always nice to be here. Thanks for having me. Glad to be your favourite second choice.
Okay. Favourite second choice. All right. Yeah, we'll go with that. Yeah. So what are we talking about this week? Probably stuff to do with AFC Wimbledon. In fact, quite a few different topics. I think we're going to fit quite a lot in to what we're going to have, like, well, 35, 40 minutes. So, yeah, we're going to squeeze quite a few topics in. We are going to quickly look back at the draw with Bradford last week. But, of course, we've got some big, big transfer news that has broken this week that we will probably start with. I just want to touch on...
You've just thrown that at me and I had no idea. What on earth has been going on?
Yeah, I see. You're fully prepped for this. As per usual.
Yeah, because we haven't seen this coming for 21 days or anything.
Not that we're counting.
No.
If not anyway. Further. Anyway, not I also bitter. Want to talk at some point about acceptable songs at football and Leighton Orient tickets and player salaries. Jackson 5, Chris got a great one for you stepping in for Stu. I'm going to say to you now, Jackson 5 this week, you've got no chance. You have zero chance.
Yeah, so we could have said that even before you did the questions.
This is a tough one. And we're going to do on this side of it, or on that side of it as well, even for a few minutes at some point. But let's get straight into it. I mean, normally we start reviewing games, but I think this week I want to start with the breaking news. We are recording this on Friday, and we have been told that Nathan Young-Coombs has been recalled by Brentford, much like Paris Mbeumo was, and it raises all sorts of questions. It wasn't so long ago that we were wondering if Nathan Young-Coombs and Ayoub Assaw could play in the same team. And Ayoub's departure seemed to cure that problem, only for now us to have gone from having two of them to zero of them and no such selection dilemma. I mean, it raises all sorts of questions. I've been speaking for a little while about how we were going to go about recruiting in the January window, because in the summer we clearly recruited, as I said, for a 3-5-2 setup. Nathan Young-Coombs and Josh as the front two. We were wondering how Ethan Chislett was going to finish feature in that. October time, poor form, lots of injuries. I think more by force than sort of our choice to do it, that we moved to a back four. 4-2-3-1 looked dodgy for Nathan Young-Coombs. Now he's gone. Now Ayoub's gone. Now Riley Towler's gone. Now Paris Mbeumo's gone. And we've got some replacements in. We've talked about Al Hamady, Pearson and Little, but I've got absolutely no idea where we go from here right now. So,
I think we should go 9-0-1, quite frankly. Nothing to be all we got left. We've got lots of defenders, haven't we? Let's be honest.
This is true.
A bit of lack of creativity in the midfield. Although obviously we've got these two untested chaps that have come in, and you never know, they could be the answer to all our prayers. But yeah, 9-0-1 for the rest of the season. That's where I'm going.
I will adapt it slightly because I'm not sure. I think you have to play Woody in there. Because he's...
Oh, okay. So all right, 8-1-1 then.
Yeah. I think that's probably fair. No, do you know what I'd say? I'd say 7-2-1.
God, no. You see, that's your foreign formations there, isn't it? That's you're importing that from Europe. Good lord.
Some early xenophobia there, but it's fine. Like, I'm just thinking. Actually, you're probably not far off though. We could have. I'm just thinking. Chris Gunter, Hussein Belair, Will Nightingale, Paul Callum Bailly, Alex Pierce, Jack Curry, Lee Brown. That's seven. There you go.
Put them Woody across the Chislett. Back. Yeah, there we go.
Josh. There you go. Woody Chislett. Josh. Done.
We will never concede.
The good thing
and there
is
there will be a lot of passing around about the 30-yard line.
A lot of it. Well, I mean, it's a good point on two things actually, because one, we are very good defensively, and we'll come on to that against how we did that against Bradford in a minute. Lots of passing across the back line, though. This is the thing. This is what I wonder about Paris and Nathan Young-Coombs being recalled. I know apparently it's due to injuries that they've sustained and recovering at Brentford, whatever. No, nobody knows what the truth really is about anything anymore, to be honest with you. But passing it along the back and the way we start the season, it's just not what we've been doing. And the way we were playing is probably not going to get the best out of either Magoma or Nathan Young-Coombs. So maybe Brentford they have had a look at that and gone,
What is the point? They did. I mean, you know, was boredom going to set in? Were they being underutilised? Obviously, I know Young-Coombs' injury did restrict him severely in the last couple of months, and Magoma was far too interested in his social media than he was to actually play football. But that's just my impression anyway. I mean, there was one pre-match where I was around, and he had a fella from his social media team was videoing everyone saying, say what you think about Paris Magoma, but bear in mind he played for us once beforehand, so flip a coin, he's either good or he's crap, depending on how you thought his one appearance was. I wonder whether this is more due to the fact that they get to play with Romeo Beckham in the future.
Isn't that... Do you think they had a choice in that? Do you think they phoned up Brentford and said, please take us back, we want to play with David Beckham's son?
With Romeo Beckham. No, obviously I'm being facetious, but you have to ask the question. You were getting first team football, although it will be with injuries and whatever, and they've recalled him to go and play in Brentford B for, I mean, and there's no, am I right in thinking there's still no youth set up in what used to be the youth set up, and it is just playing each other in friendlies and all sorts of stuff, or is there actually something?
No, they don't play competitive games, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, good luck to them. Is all I can say. I hope they have wonderful careers, but obviously it was a shame they didn't want to stay and stick out the season.
Who knows exactly whose decision it was.
Not true. Yeah, I am perhaps letting other issues taint my view.
Yes, there might be another member of the squad that you're perhaps aiming that more towards. Yeah. But my point still stands. I think now I'm a bit of a loss about how we go about the rest of the season. If we're going to continue with 4-2-3-1, are we going to suggest that Armani Little plays alongside Woody instead of George Marsh, even though George Marsh played on Saturday and played well? We're guessing that Harry Pell will now continue to play just behind Josh Davison, because Josh Davison is essentially our only striker at the minute. Zach Robinson was either ill or injured for the Bradford game, but I imagine that now Nathan Young-Coombs has gone back, that Zach will stay and see out the season with us, unless we get someone else in.
You'd like to hope so.
It just seems all a bit of a... I'm not really sure what plans we actually have for how we want to go about things. And perhaps as an indication of that, we will, before we get on to Ayoub, the Bradford game. Yes, I see. Ahoob, you could even call him now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The Bradford game sort of hinted at perhaps a little bit of a lack of real plan. Because once Bradford, so the game for those, you know, just to recap for those of you that, you know, need a reminding, 0-0. About the hour mark, they had a man sent off. They were down to 10 men. And we made changes. We were 4-2-3-1, but we brought Little on. We brought Al Amadi on. We brought Courtney Senior on. No idea what the actual shape was. No, it didn't look like the players really understood or knew how they were meant to go about attacking Bradford, who were a man down. And we lost. We basically lost all momentum, and Bradford saw out the game comfortably and kept a clean sheet comfortably in the end. You obviously didn't see the game.
No.
Did you
I've had a lot of people talk to me about it.
Right.
And it sounds like we were a little lucky not to lose in the end with the chances they had towards the end. And it sounded like a bit of a lack of creative spark.
Yeah. I mean...
Was the bottom line.
Yeah, that's exactly as it is. The actual flow of the game is what you've come to expect, especially first half. We defend really, really well. We defended deep. We defended midfield right on top of the defence. Bradford couldn't get in behind. They couldn't get anything going. We were looking to play on the break. We just, when the owner, we struggled to do that against Bradford, it must be said. And then when the onus was on us to attack after the sending off for Walker, we just didn't have a clue how to break them down, to be honest with you. We had one chance. Keeper made a good save from Ethan Chislett, which, you know, ball fell to him nicely from a cross shot, fell into his path. Chislett then had a free kick. The keeper did well to save it, even though it was Chislett did go to the keeper's side. Comfortable save. I thought their keeper was really good, by the way. And as you say, they had a real good chance at the end. Nick had to make a great save in the closing moments, and they also had one before the red card. They also had one off the line. I think a draw was a fair result overall. But yeah, as you say, it's this lack of creativity. We 2-0 draws in a row. I think something like 3 in the last 6. Defensively, very good. Attacking, not so much.
Just not quite getting there. But while we're discussing it, I don't like the phrase shout out. It's very silly. But Nick Zarnov has come on leaps and bounds in the last couple of months after being almost vilified for quite some time. And I just wanted to say well done for him. He's pulled off some great saves and has definitely saved us more than cost us, I would suggest, this season. But I just wanted to put that one in there because I don't think he gets enough praise sometimes for what he does.
You're quite right to praise a player that is doing well and making good saves. I, however, am miserable and
you surprise me.
Nihilistic. And I would just point out the one thing you probably aren't aware of, and I don't think we've mentioned on the podcast, his distribution seems to be getting worse. His kicking seems to be getting worse.
Isn't that why we've got the sort of older heads in the back, sort of 3 or 5, whichever way we play it, that can take the ball out rather than him having to rely on his distribution, which, yes, on a few occasions has caused us issues when he's either punted it straight into touch, to use a rugby parlance, or straight to another player. Don't get me wrong, I've seen it happen. I've watched the highlights. I know what goes on. But to be able to keep that number of clean sheets in a team that, yeah, we're mid-table, but then everyone's mid-table, I think, apart from about 5 teams. I think he's doing quite well now.
Mentioned defenders there and Alex Pearce. We are defending a touch deep, or we did against Bradford anyway, a little bit deeper than we normally do, although we normally do set up quite defensively. But I mentioned him last week. I'm just going to say it again. I think he's going to be an important player for us over the remainder of the season. I know people weren't too impressed with him earlier in the season. Results weren't great. They felt he slowed us down. We became a little bit of a cliche, him passing the ball sideways to Lee Brown. But I think his experience will be vital because I don't think we're in trouble, but I think we need the experience heads really to step up and get us through the rest of the season now, because as I say, we've got a lot of young players. We've made the team even younger now with the acquisitions we've made. I think we're a bit short of numbers as well. So unless we get some more bodies in this last week of the transfer window, I think we're going to have to look to the older statesmen. And I think Pearce is I think he's going to be great for us. I really, really do.
We always do need an older head at the back, more experienced head at the back. Paul Robinson, for example, being a semi-recent example of someone at the back who can really rile people up and get people going, and also be that cool head at the back that will see us through. Yeah, we definitely need him.
It's not the most entertaining, it must be said, at the moment, but hey, it is what it is. Right, so Ayuba Sal.
No, oh, bless him. I hope he has a lovely career.
He's not going to Korea, he's going to Qatar.
Nice to know you're here.
We talked about our difficulty creating chances. I think that's reflected in our goals for and against this season, the way we set up defensively. But Ayoub was the creative spark. And we talked about we struggle to create chances. What we do have is someone in Ayoub that scored goals and won a lot of free kicks, and our set pieces from Chislett have been vitally important this season. So we have lost a real threat. Before we go down the line of what happened to Ayoub, his immediate replacement was Sam Pearson. And just to give a quick shout on Pearson, just needs to bulk up a little bit. Looks like a tidy footballer. Looks like he's got a bit of pace, but he needs to be more aggressive, especially down in League Two. It will come. It might not come immediately, but there's a sort of phrase, I suppose it's a word, or a line of thinking in wrestling, funnily enough. You might be surprised for me to make the reference here.
I'm just going to mute myself for a minute. You crack on.
But I think this is a valid point. In wrestling, when you're training to be a wrestler, there are some people that are more willing to take a hit when they're training. It takes some people a bit longer to get used to having someone actually physically touch you, hit you, push you down, strike you, whatever. Do you know who took a little while to get used to it was Alexa Bliss? She was one. She didn't like getting hit in her early days of her career. And Sam Pearson had seemed to he reminded me of that basically on Saturday. In the short time we've seen him, looked like he wasn't he needed to go in, be a bit more confident going in for tackles, maybe press a little bit harder, just be a bit more aggressive. So that's what we need from him, I think. Anyway, back to you.
Hopefully that's why he's here.
Well, that makes sense.
Hopefully that will come. But for the long-time listeners on the 307th episode, I'd like to just congratulate Nick on making it to 950 Alexa Bliss references in the 9 years podcast. Congratulations.
I'm sure it's more than that. I'm sure it's more than that. Anyway. Thank you. I'll take that, by the way. Mm. So, yeah, Ayub. So he's gone, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. He just released his... Somebody has just released a hype video for him at this alleged new club over in Qatar. And it's... You know, it's a risky strategy, Cotton, but we'll have to see how it pays out.
It's a risky strategy? What did you say? Cotton?
Oh, is it? That's a film quote from Dodgeball, if anybody watches that or has watched that film. You know, he has gone off to Qatar, and we would suggest on the back of the World Cup and the hype that's come from that. He blanked out his social media. He's either refused to play or has had apparently the worst case of man flu ever known to man and not played.
Yeah, and I think that's the frustration that a lot of fans have had. It's the, well, there was no really comment made about him or his absence at all. The official line was that he was ill. I don't think that was actually said explicitly until teams were announced for the Bradford game. And there was a tweet that said, you know, Nathan Yeung-Koom, Zach Robinson and Ayub Asell all missing through a mixture of injury and illness. Rumours that he's refused to play. We don't know the truth of exactly what's happened here. I mean, there's an argument that he could, you know, he could have been ill, but not physically ill. Could be a mental health issue, perhaps related to the move, of course. You don't know. There's lots of speculation. What I will say is, if, and of course there are going to be parallels with what happened with Luke McCormick in the summer. Mm-hmm. If it is or was the case that both or one of those two players have steadfastly said they're not going to train and they're not going to play for us because they want out, then my first question would be, did we continue to pay their wages? Because that's the first thing I'd have stopped doing straight away.
Yeah, unfortunately, I suppose contract employment law these days doesn't allow for that sort of thing.
But, how? Like, if I said to my work, if I said to my school, do you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go and do teach somewhere else, but only when a place opens up for me to go to, and I just stay at home. Surely I can't still be claiming to get my salary every month.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. But at the same time, if you play the game and say, well, I've got this, that, the other wrong with me, you can't really say that you haven't, especially if you've got people working in the background that will back up what you've got to say.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know if that's what... Do you know what I mean? And I'm going purely on the idea that he's not claimed to have any mental health issues or anything like this. This is purely speculation.
Yeah.
If it's just a case of him saying flatly, I don't want to play for you anymore because I want to move elsewhere, therefore I'm not coming in, then I think under those circumstances, I'd say, then we're not going to pay you.
Yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, I suppose. Mm. But, you know, he will forever be known as doing a McCormick now. And that's the new phrase. Allegedly, of course.
Not the most common phrase. Yes, well, it's all alleged at this point because nobody knows. It's a really difficult one. Lots of fans upset because we don't know. We don't know what the truth of the matter was. If we were protecting the player for whatever reason, we don't know. And will we ever know? Should we ever know?
We did finally put out a statement saying, obviously, we're not looking to sell him, but... And that's a fair comment. But it could be argued we left the cons too late yet again. You know, I'd say we're about 2 weeks, maybe 2.5 weeks too late to make that comment. If, like you say, it's just to protect the player, then so be it. If it is a case that our comms wheels aren't turning as quickly as they should be, maybe that's something we need to look into. Yeah, it leaves a little bit of a sour taste, which is a shame because he seemed like a nice guy. He was playing very well for us, did very well, but it's all ended a little bit messy.
Not quite. He's not quite at the level of Messi, I would say.
Yeah,
And
well, I could have said it all ended a bit Ronaldo, because
well,
let's be honest, that's not gone well.
that's not ended well either.
But at least the sound knows where he's going to play.
Well, yeah, and again, probably for fantastic money and his motivations. I'm not going to say we don't know if they're purely money motivated. There are probably other considerations. Could be family considerations. Could be cultural reasons for wanting to move to Qatar as well. We just don't
Genuinely
know.
don't have, yeah.
But as much as it is a problem for us on the pitch that he is departing, actually off the pitch, I don't think it's that bad because, as I've said before, we believe his release fee was triggered buyout clause in a contract of over £1 million. And I said before, I don't think there was an English Football League club that was going to stump up £1 million for him. I really don't.
I don't think
And
there was. We discussed this before, didn't we, about the fact that he's technically a very good footballer, but a strong breeze would knock him over. And as found in the number of times he was fouled. But yeah, no, I think you're right. I think, especially with allegedly the money that's flowing through League Two, according to the latest statistics, we'd have been lucky to get over £1 million for it. Well, we just wouldn't have, would we? If Rudony goes for 800,000 to a team two divisions above, we wouldn't have got a sale into the Premier League for over £1 million.
yeah, I mean, I still, as I said, my point was if you're thinking of over £1 million in English football, point me to the club that's going to pay it. Because I'll tell you, a club like Luton, for example, he doesn't fit them. Unfortunately, and I know we touched on this before we started recording. When Ayew came into the team a couple of years ago, scored in his debut away at Shrewsbury, and Mark Robinson made the point, look, he's been written off for too small. His frame's too slight, whatever it was, but he's a good footballer. And yes, he is a good footballer, but a club in the Championship is looking for that physicality as well and that size. And that Luton have a very specific sort of recruitment policy when it comes to that, especially in their forward players. They're all over 6 foot, they're all fast, they're quick, they're strong. And he doesn't have that element to his game. He is an outstanding, with the ball at his feet, he is outstanding. There is no denying that whatsoever. But is a Championship team going to come in for him? I didn't think so. Who in League One was going to pay £1 million for him? I genuinely don't know. But hey, this is not to discredit him. Excellent footballer. And well, yeah, we do wish him the best. Like, all the best for what happens. Whether he comes back to English football at some point, only time will tell.
Yes, well, let's see how the Qatari League gets on, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, there's another issue that comes with this, and it is a moral point. And this is where it becomes very difficult when you want to be a football club based on certain morals, principles, and values, and that is accepting money from Qatar. And yeah, we didn't speak about really my personal stance on the World Cup in Qatar. People that know me obviously know I didn't watch a second of it. That was actually, to be honest with you, it was less to do with Qatar itself. It was more the fact that every single footballer who had spent the last few years proclaiming their moral superiority over us, the great unwashed, suddenly had no qualm whatsoever going to a country in which homosexuality is illegal and women are second-class citizens. And I don't mean to make this all political on you, but I
Too
just
late.
too late for it. I know it just turned me off Premier League and elite footballers. Yeah, just not for me anymore. This is the problem now. We have a football club that wants to be progressive and wants to have the right values and do the right things. We can come onto certain songs that we can or can't sing in a minute. Not that anyone's telling us we can't sing them, but they're not been banned. But we want to have these values, and yet we find ourselves in a bit of a moral quandary. And this is the problem. At some point along the line, you cannot ever in modern society be morally whiter than white. You're going to have areas that come into, contradict each other or make you appear somewhat hypocritical. And perhaps this is one of those things. I'd be
I would
interested to
like
get
to
other people's
challenge your.
views on this.
I would like to challenge your comment, white to the white, and suggest you take your privilege there. No, in regards to the Qatar World Cup, completely get your point, and I didn't watch a lot of it, if any of it, really. Primarily because I was working, but also because yeah, it doesn't make any sense that certain. I mean, it was obviously when Russia and Qatar were awarded the World Cups, successive World Cups, it stunk to high heaven. Why, in, you know, oh God, listen, I'm going on a rant, but what on earth those two countries in particular got the World Cup? We've never really got answered, but we know that lots of money was involved,
yeah,
allegedly.
I point you to the opening song of this week's show.
Yeah, oh, well, absolutely. I mean, it goes without saying. But listen, it's happened, it's done. And if we're going to make £1 million out of it, yes, I understand the source of that cash is obviously a source of concern, but they triggered the correct amount. Obviously, if they'd have turned round and said, here's £500,000, say nothing in the back door, so to speak, and say no more about it, then I'd have asked the question. But if they've triggered the clause, we can't really stand in the way.
Well, here's a point for you then. What had happened, what would have happened if Milton Keynes had triggered the buyout clause?
Yet again, another very interesting point, because apparently we're not supposed to be doing business with them. And that was ratified by the Don's Trust. Not to do direct business
not
with them.
Not to do direct business with them.
Business, yes. Mm. As opposed to any sort of ex-players that were on loan or whatever, which, you know, then it's like anybody who lived in Milton Keynes or drove down the M1 past it, you know, we get... You go into, you spiral if you start thinking about that. But yeah, we're not supposed to do any direct business with them. Yes, if Milton Keynes had triggered the £1 million clause, but then their particularly vocal set of fans probably would have had a problem with it as well.
Sorry, they have vocal fans? This is a myth.
Possibly rising to three after the transfer window.
Oh, yeah, we've all been to that stage and there's nothing vocal in there. Jeez. My word.
You know what I mean.
Anyway. Well, that is, it has happened. It's gone. It's done. Ayoub will be parting us, and we look to see whether Sam Pearson and Ali Alhamady were his replacements already lined up and already in. Which, if the case is great, I think we need to be patient with those two individuals. They're not going to come in and replace Ayoub's goals or his. His assists straight away. But hey. This is fine, by the way, for me, because as I said before, I've got no expectations for this season. I think we should just enjoy the season and take the wins when they come and see where we end up at the end of it. I don't think we should be constantly fretting about trying to catch the playoffs. I know people say there's not many points in it, but I think judging our performances, despite only one defeat in 12, it is only one win in 6, though. And yeah, I don't think we're going to be pushing for them, and we should just not have a season of not having to worry about going down, because we have not had one of those for a few seasons.
Yeah, we did. We did comment on that before the season, didn't we? Just a season of consolidation. None of this straight bounce back, and we don't want to end up being a Forest Green, I want to say.
No, and don't say about Forest Green.
Second,
well, Forest Green. No, but one.
Because they bounce between the leagues for a while, don't they?
Are you thinking of Forest Green? I think you might be thinking of someone else.
Okay. Pick a team that bounces between leagues and never really gets anywhere, and then ends up overdoing it. I thought they went up to the championship and then came straight back down, and it was all a bit of a nightmare.
Do you know what I'm trying to struggle? Burton Albion.
No, oh, I'm not thinking of Burton Albion.
Maybe Burton Albion. Forest Green going to the championship. No.
Okay.
All right, I've been in that case. Yeah. I was going to say.
And what we didn't want to do was go straight back out the trap door and end up being a Torquay in the bottom four of the National League.
Yeah, Torquay, Scunthorpe, Oldham, many clubs involved in that.
Scunthorpe are in trouble.
You're probably actually thinking, when you're saying Forest Green, do you know who you're thinking of? You're thinking of Yeovil, who got to the championship and then plummeted straight through the leagues. Mm. Yes, I mean, they're similar. They're playing similar colours and stadiums are vaguely similar.
Don't try and make me feel better.
I'm doing my best. I'm trying to cover up. Anyway, what I was going to say, I mentioned their morals, ethics as a football club. A couple of our songs have been called into question. Statement from the club, which quite rightly condemned flair being thrown on the pitch because that helps nobody, and I know you've got strong feelings on that. Alleged homophobic chanting towards an assistant referee, or as I like to call them, linesman or linesperson.
Challenge.
but then there was also a hint about some songs that I believe some fans have registered complaints about, and we understand these songs to be the Champagne song. Again, do you know we've been singing that song for 23 years now? I remember first hearing it, which I think was the very first time it was aired, was Derby away when we lost 4-0 in the Premier League.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the Champagne song, yes, is a couple of the lyrics are slightly, but I don't drink champagne and neither do I you know, inhale class A drugs, it doesn't mean you know, the song is not, we're not like statement of facting this, you know.
Yeah, it's not to be taken literally.
It isn't, which I think is, I mean, if you want to go on another rant, and there will be a lot of cuts to this podcast, I'm sure. You could say that's a societal problem at the minute, where everybody is saying, "But you said it, so it must be true." Mm. It is an ironic song meant to be a bit of a laugh. It is not directed at anyone in particular. We certainly do not think that all of the away opposition's wives are on the game. And neither have they posed for illicit adult magazines.
They probably have if they're Watford, to be honest.
Well, you know what I'm saying. It's a shame it's been reported. You know, I wouldn't wish anybody of our own fans certainly to take it the way that it's been framed. But as we say, it is the way that the world is going. And I just wanted to clarify my point on flares. I think the problem is not when you go to a open air, no roof area on football pitches in non-league and things like that, and the bigger bowls that you see in Europe where the flares go off, because the smoke has somewhere to go. What we've got is a lot of grounds which still have very enclosed stands, and when flares go off, you cannot see a damn thing. I'll give you, for instance, I was at Chelsea PSG. I was working. I didn't go to watch it, and I was in the away end, and the PSG fan let the flare off, and underneath, and it was on the lower tier. And it was blinding. You couldn't see a thing. And there are a good sort of 50 steps down to pitch level. If it went wrong, it would really go wrong. And I cannot believe you'd have an entire block of football fans just stay stock still while choking and blinding smoke disappears. So you can't have one rule for Chelsea and one rule for Margate, which is Stu mentioned a few times in his blog the other day. That's why I mentioned Margate. You have to plan it everywhere. I understand people say no pyro, no party and all that sort of palaver. Ultimately, if it's a safety issue, it's got nothing to do with, oh, you just spoil sports, you don't like it because we like it. You either ban it everywhere or nowhere, and you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, when they say no pyro, no party, I don't really get it, to be honest with you. It does nothing for me. In Eastern Europe, it looks fantastic, but...
Apparently, if you do not have flares, then there is no chance of any sort of social gathering afterwards.
Oh, right. Well, it's political correctness gone mad.
Anyway.
We do digress. I mean, in terms of the songs, yeah. I mean, one thing I should clarify is, to my knowledge, nobody's actually trying to ban these songs or say anyone will be punished for singing these songs. They're just asking people to be mindful of them. Which I guess is fair enough, you can say that, but I think, you know, you're chasing the end of the rainbow to us to football fans to do that, especially songs you've been singing for many, many years. The other song, South London Is Wonderful, singing that a lot longer than the Champagne song, and, you know, cries that it's been sexist.
Yeah, obviously that one is, yeah, again, it's a lot of very coarse language, and you wouldn't want your four-year-old to hear it, don't get me wrong. Sadly, it is a fact of football supporting fans, and there are a lot worse songs out there that aren't exactly banned per se. But we are where we are.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit as well, with those songs, unless you know the lyrics to them, if you're not in amongst it, so for example, if you are taking your young children down into the family stand in the East Stand or in the West Stand where we just don't sing, then unless you're familiar with the lyrics, you won't be able to, I don't think you'd be able to discern them. And certainly a child wouldn't be able to work out exactly what was being said. So, hey, look, I mean, it's fine. Yeah. People can be offended by these things. They can use their freedom of speech to voice that. That's absolutely fine. But I think, I'm not sure it's, I don't think it's a battle that's really going to go on, if you know what I mean. I think it's been said. I know Danny Macklin was on Twitter. And I will say Danny Macklin, I've not spoken to Danny Macklin yet, nor would I expect to have done. But, I mean, it's great to have someone who's approachable and likes to engage with fans. I think perhaps on Twitter at times it might not be the best way to do it. And especially.
Yeah, Twitter's a hotbed of absolute shithousery. Yeah,
I think probably best to not get involved on Twitter. But also, I'd say, Danny, it's great. And he's tweeting on like Monday night, 9 o'clock in the evening. He was tweeting during, he went to the Palace Chelsea game. No, not, yeah. Yeah, Chelsea. It was at Chelsea, sorry. Yeah, Chelsea Palace game.
Yes, it was at Chelsea.
And he was tweeting during half time of that one. I thought, I kind of just want to say to him, just switch off. Do you know what I mean? You don't need to be doing that now. And you need to just not think about AFC Wimbledon for a bit, because everyone needs to switch off from their jobs. So for his mental health more than anything, I'd give him, if he wants my advice, he probably doesn't care. And I can't blame him, to be fair, because I talk a lot of
Sorry,
shit.
who are you again?
Exactly. We're roughly running out of time. The other thing, quick point I wanted to make, Leighton Orient tickets are sold out. This is a mistake that the club have made here. I'm going to be frank about this one. There was no advertisement that Leighton Orient tickets went on sale. It just appeared on the ticket site, and it was always going to sell out because Leighton Orient are top of the league. Our away attendances are up. Lots of fans want to go to away games now. We saw that at Sutton. I was surprised there was no pre-sale for Don's Trust members or season ticket holders or anything like that. And now there's lots of people really quite upset that they're missing out on Leighton Orient away. So, yeah, that was a little bit of a boo-boo, I think.
That was an error, yes.
I'll leave it at that. Right, on that side of it, Chris, to change the subject, I just thought you'd like to be involved in on that side of it. So you might want three minutes to the Ghostbusters theme on a completely random topic. And I was just wondering, you probably don't care, has The Apprentice run its course?
Not having been a massive fan of The Apprentice since about the second or third season, I would say yes. I think it's much like most, what's the best phrase to say it? Most reality TV, because let's be honest, still in the realms of reality TV, it has a shelf life. Every series has a shelf life. Big Brother outstayed its welcome. The Traitors, for example, once you've done it once, obviously the next series is a problem because everybody knows what's going to happen. Much like The Apprentice, everybody knows, well, there's going to be a challenge, there'll be another challenge. You've got to sell something, you've got to make something, you've got to do something. Really, I would say it's past its sell-by date by about 3 or 4 years.
I watched it so far this year. They are not the best or most entertaining group of people, it must be said. However, if The Apprentice has run its course, what made me question it this year in particular was when the cliche scene of the winning team going off doing something and they film these really fake shots where someone says something vaguely witty about the task and makes some pun, and then they go back to the cafe and the sad music plays, and we've seen it so many times. But if The Apprentice is past its sell-by date, you know what has passed its sell-by date even more than The Apprentice?
Go on.
Strictly Come Fucking Dancing.
Is that what it's called now? God, see, these are...
For fuck's sake. It's the same. It's the same thing every year.
It's lots of people dancing, and normally somebody with some sort of special story will win it at the end of it. We all know what's happening. I could have had a bet on it from the first episode who was going to win this year. I certainly did last year. But like I say, lots of formats, lots of reality TV. It's after 3 or 4 seasons and all the surprises that they pull, it's time to get a new idea. But then you could say that about cinema sometimes. Most of the films, the big films that are coming out this year, are all either sequels or from the same IP that's been around for about 20 or 30 years.
Do you not think superhero movies have gone? Surely they're over with now, surely.
You would have thought so, but hey, listen, there's nothing like flogging a dead horse when you've got no better ideas.
This is the problem as well, by the way, with other remakes of things that have been brought to have been modernised for the modern world, and we're not going to get into it now, but it's kind of like, do you know what, just make something new. If you want to tell those stories, tell them by all means. Not got a problem, but try it. Just create new characters.
If any listeners are into their films and want a tip, Bullet Train, which was the Brad Pitt vehicle that came out recently and has just been released on streaming, is a very good subverted, although, you know, you can see elements of other films, but it's a decent, very silly time where you can switch your brain off and just watch a good film.
Thank you for that. 2022 wasn't a bad year for films, by the way, and we had many good films. I should say Belfast was a fantastic film, and After Sun was a fantastic film. And I can't remember when Ghostbusters Afterlife came out. Was that 2021? But that was a very good film.
And, yeah, it was.
Yeah, The Living was a very good film as well. So, yeah, anyway.
Anyway,
moving on. Very quick, Jackson 5. We are playing Newport County on Saturday, possibly because you know what Newport Stadium is like, you know what their pitch is like, and you know what the temperatures are like. And already we have Bristol Rovers, Morecambe and Doncaster have already called off their games for the weekend. So we'll see if a game goes ahead. I look back at our last five results against Newport County. Can you name them?
No, I cannot. 2-2, 4-0, 1-0.
Well, there was a 2-2. You're right. You know what?
There
the
was
last
a 2-2. I do remember the 2-2. Didn't we lose, or did we lose or win 5-4 at one point against them up there? Was it them?
No, not in the league anyway. We might have done some cup or something like that, but no.
I'm trying to think. 4-0, maybe. Was there a 4-0 in there? We did at King's Meadow?
No. These are also, I should clarify, sorry. So our last five trips to Newport.
Oh, trips too, sorry.
Yes, so just the last five times we have visited Newport County, stretching back to non-league. And do you have any memories of any recollections of any of these fixtures whatsoever? A lot of people will know one. A lot of people will get one straight away, the first one. Right. But the rest, obviously probably not.
The 2-2. I've got to be honest, no, because most of the times, given the fact that really it shouldn't count as an English league football fixture, I don't really pay much attention to them.
No, that's fair enough. Newport, by the way, is the worst place in the country, and that includes Watford and Milton Keynes. It is horrendous. Absolutely horrendous. Do you remember the scene in the IT Crowd where Jen goes out for a cigarette and she walks outside and it's like turned into like Siberian Russia?
Yes.
Yeah. It's like that. Newport's like that in August. So anyway. Right, the last five results. 2015 was the 2-2 draw, which kick-started our promotion run that season.
That's why I remember it.
2-0 down at half-time. We came back to draw 2-2 in the Mellon kit. The year before that, we lost 4-1. I think a young Joe Piggott might have scored Newport's fourth that day.
Okay.
If memory serves me correctly. The year before that, we won 2-1 thanks to a late goal by Charlie Sheringham.
Charlie Sheringham. Whatever happened to him?
I don't know. Then 2011 in the conference, we drew 3-3, very early January game. There was lots of snow on the pitch and we came back from 3-1 down to get a 3-3 draw. And then, of course, the first one I was thinking about was the 4-1 victory, first game in the Conference South with a John Main hat-trick.
Agreed.
Well, I think
I was crap at that. So thanks for including me, but yeah, it didn't go very well.
Dean Holdsworth was the manager of Newport at the time. So
what the hell?
There you go. Blast from the past. Newport on Saturday, by the way, if the game does go ahead, they're 18th currently. I think they're in a little bit of trouble, you know. I think they are. Their squad is looking a bit weak and they are winless in six.
Why did you bring that up?
So they're winless in six and they've drawn four of those. They've not won at home since the 19th of November. Which was against
Gillingham. Thanks for that. Yeah, you know that means we're going to lose, right?
I think it might be another draw. It might even, if it goes ahead, it might even be another 0-0 draw because I don't think they've got much, to be honest.
I was going for draw when you were going to ask me, and I will stick with that.
What sort of draw? A score draw or a non-score draw?
It depends how the new guys perform. If they turn up, maybe we'll get a score draw, but as long as we keep a clean sheet, I think 0-0 will suit me, to be honest. Go away, get a draw. I've said that throughout watching Wimbledon. Away game should be a draw. We should try and win at home.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, there you go. Updates, of course, will be on Twitter at 9YRS Podcast. But for now, I think that's where we'll call it a day. Don't forget, we also have a European game following Newport. So we are visited by Warsaw.
Home to Warsaw, aren't we? Yes.
Yeah, so in the midweek. So that's a tough game as well because they are doing well this season. They beat us at their place. So, hey, it's going to be cold as well. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Chris, thank you very much for joining me this week.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
We shall sign off as we usually do. Alexa Bliss, bag first, milk last. 2 + 2 = 4. Our free meeting will end in 10 minutes, so this is timed perfectly. We will speak to you again next week.